So instead of paying X amount to the IRS, you don't pay them because you bought this property, and you take that money you were going to pay them and put it in your investment account. And you're starting to get a return of money by owning this piece of property. It comes in multiple in multiple places.
Yeah.
And so then you just parlay it into the next one. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday.
What's happening?
My main man, Jake Sheehy.
What's happening? What's happening? Great day to be alive.
Great day to be alive. You ever heard the song by Travis Tritt? It's a great day to be alive.
No.
That's your, you say that on all of our stuff.
Really? It's a song already? Look it up,
like back in probably early 2000s, I'd say. It became popular. Travis Tritt.
All right, I'll look it up. Oh, dude. Okay, nice, dude. I like how we're starting this episode. This is a good one.
So there we go. Homework.
I'll listen.
Maybe you should put it in the background music when we start off this Whiskey Wednesday.
Okay. It's probably playing right now.
It's going to be your theme song. I don't know if it's going to be your style.
Dude, I'll get into it. I'll start singing it. All right, we got some good stuff today, huh?
Hey, awesome.
We got some very educational stuff today.
Good.
We're talking about your event. We're talking about this crazy incident that happened in Tampa, Florida. This guy got stabbed in a short-term rental. What would you do? Some wild news there. Ooh. Then we're getting into three hardcore STR questions. How long can short-term rentals make you money? Mm-hmm. How fast do you pay off your mortgage? And then we're going to talk about income potential. We're talking about cash on cash return. We're talking about return of capital, some importance there, some misconceptions, things people need to be aware of, that kind of deal. But first, here we go. We're starting off our first point here.
Yeah.
You went to a big event. Networking. I don't know what the proper way to call this, to be honest. Networking
mastermind event.
Yep. Okay. So I was kind of curious on, why'd you go? Where did you go? Who'd you meet? Just come on. Give me the deets, man. I want to know about it. What happened?
This is one of those events that you can only share so many details. Yeah. It was one of those events that you can't pay to get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's by invitation only. We have a great friend and Vodacy member, Anthony. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to leave Anthony.
There you go.
First name.
Okay.
So people can go track Anthony down.
Okay.
Shout out to Anthony. Thank you for the invite. It was being able to be in a room of people that are, to say I was the low man on the totem pole is an understatement. These were, verified billionaires, like, more than one, double digits in the billionaire range. You've got politicians, military, high ranking military officials. You've got really amazing business people. And it was a networking event, mastermind event that we were able to go to. Most of the people in that room, people know their names. And we're not posting selfies on Instagram and bragging about it as much as going up and just being able to put the phones away, learn from each other and be able to be a part of a group like that. You always learn from Napoleon Hill's, really made famous the mastermind concept and being able to, mastermind with people coming into, and talking and coming into one room with more than one mind and what comes of it. And this was, this was one of those that it was pretty special for me. It was the first time I've gotten invited to something like that. And it was, there's a lot of things you learn. There's a lot of things when you're just observing and you're just watching. And that's what I try to do in those types of things and those types of environments is to be able to just, take it in and see what we can take away from it, learn what can we contribute to it. It was a pretty amazing four days that we were able to spend with a lot of pretty amazing people.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
What were some things, you kind of talked a little bit about like mentality of these people. Was there a really good takeaway that you felt like, oh, wow, these people, they don't talk about X, Y, and Z. They don't think about X, Y, and Z. Is there anything that, kind of stuck with you like that?
So I always take notes, I'm always trying to think, okay, what, because I like to reference back and say, what did we do? And I'll just write words down, right? Yeah. Just things that I think about. And the first thing I wrote down was this, the whole group has this humble confidence. It was very interesting. Like nobody is introducing themselves with their title, their business title, what they do. Like it's people would just introduce themselves by their first name. We just start hanging out and it was, it was really refreshing. Mm-hmm. Most people would say their hobbies rather than their actual right. their actual resume. Like uh-huh. they would say, you know, I'm so and so, and you know, I love fly fishing, or I like this, or I mm-hmm. you know, I do this, and they would be very. They would almost most all of them would downplay what they did, but they had this confidence as well. Mm. So there was this humility, and then there's this fine line of humility, and then this confidence. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a room of, you know, pretty much everybody in there is about as competitive as they get. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to tell you they're an alpha. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, it's yeah. pretty obvious in yeah. in a room like that who you're around and what uh-huh. you're doing. And it's just this feeling and aura you get around these guys. And one of the other things I wrote down is how curious that everybody was. Everybody really mm-hmm. genuinely wanted to learn about other people, what they were doing, how they were doing it. Mm. And as competitive as everybody was, they're ultra competitive. Like we would do shooting competitions. We were playing cornhole, and we would do whatever we were doing. It was really, right. it got really heated and competitive.
Right.
Because everybody's super competitive, but you also wanted your competitor to like push you to do better. And right. they were like that with their business and everything else. Like they were really genuinely curious of how are you doing? What are you doing from business to family to whatever,
right.
but also like there was just this abundance mindset. You know, it's always interesting to me. I never in 4 days didn't hear one person talk about why they couldn't do something. It was just, they were figuring out how to do something. They would have an idea, and these guys would just like go after and take action, or they would share their, hey, listen, we did this last year. Here's how we got over that hump. And it was just this collaboration of positive energy and abundance type of a mindset. Nobody had limiting beliefs. There was nobody believes in a zero sum game in that room. It was this, you know, there, everybody was like, hey, 2 + 2 = 6. And it was this, you know, there was never a win lose scenario type things. And I know I've never been in a room like that. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't know that I have. I spent a small fortune on coaching and mentorships and masterminds. I'm a huge believer in power of proximity and being around people to help you raise the bar. This was a whole different, like a whole different room, right? Yeah. And it was pretty amazing just to see and feel the energy and stuff like that. And just, man, nobody thinks, you know, we work with people all the time. We hear stuff all the time.
Right.
And we always hear, I never heard somebody say they were too busy. I mean, these guys are busy. I mean, they're all around the world all the time. I'm hearing their schedules and I'm like, man, if anybody could ever say I'm too busy for that, it would be every single one of these guys in this room. Mm-hmm. And nobody said it. You know, nobody ever acted like they didn't have time for something or somebody. And it was pretty amazing.
Wow.
You know, the other thing that was really interesting was everybody talked about these long-term visions, these long-term goals. They didn't think about like when they would make an investment or when they were building a business or when they were doing something, just the conversations they were having, they were looking at longer time horizons. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at 5, 10, 20, 50 year time horizons when they're putting things together. And they're like, you know, we know this isn't going to hit for 30 years. And they're working on it. And the things they're working on change the course of how we operate as a society. And so they're working on big, big things. Mm-hmm. And they have these long-term visions. And I think, man, how can we apply that to just our everyday lives? And then they were... You know, they would sit down and you know, talk to me and act like my stuff was the most interesting thing that they've ever heard of. And it was just a group of people who wanted to learn about other people, what they were doing, how they were doing it, how they can apply these principles. And the success principles seem to be very, you know, consistent with what you hear people talk about, but I was able to see it in real life. And it was pretty awesome. A couple of the things I wrote down was how self-disciplined they were. You know, this was a, you know, we were basically in the backwoods of Maine, you know, and it was, you know, it was out in kind of the middle of nowhere. It was very, very like not a lot of resources or anything around. They made it amazing.
Right.
But it was like this all-inclusive eat, drink, everything else. Mm-hmm. Like nobody, like the whole group, you would think, I don't think in 4 days I saw anybody, you know, drunk, right?
I see what you're saying.
Like I've been to a lot of conferences.
Yeah.
I've been to a lot of business things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of a sudden people get away from the, and they overindulge and they act like idiots and they do stupid stuff. Like this, the self-discipline within this group was amazing. And it should be, right? And you would expect that. You would expect it all the way across the board, but I'm like, why? So there's a reason. They're no different than all of us, but they have these other qualities, right? They have this self-discipline, this long-term visions. They have this sense of ultimate, like we talk a lot about self-reliance and personal responsibility. I mean, that is like oozing out of these guys.
Right.
And it's just, and then yet you have this side of them too, that is like, they want everybody in there to come back next year, you know, doubling and tripling their net worth and their, you know, their family successes and everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you got like, there were people from all over the world and they would, it was all inclusive to a lot of different people. Yeah. There were a lot of Muslims there and they did a Muslim prayer music at a certain time each day. And they set this like prayer tent up for the you know, because there was people from like, again, all over the world, and there was a lot of people from the Middle East that were that came in. I shouldn't say a lot, handfuls, you know, but still like trying to be, but it was very, you know, faith, family, like country, like everything. It was an awesome place to be. The business side of it, I mean, it was crazy.
That's really cool. Something's sticking out to me. I wrote a couple of things. How was it when it comes to bragging, silence, and their speech for me? I'm curious, do these guys, when they're talking, you know, you talked about like the confidence, but they're humble. Is it, what kind of, it's not like a bragging-ness. It doesn't sound like it at all, right? It's not like, we did 3X this year. Oh, okay. Well, I did 5. No. It's not like that. Okay. It's like, it's more like good for you, man. That's trying to get to 5. Yeah. That kind of style.
Yeah. Nobody's out there sticking their chest out.
Yeah.
Like these guys are all the real deal. I mean, pretty much everybody, you could Google any of them in that room and Wikipedia is coming up with a whole bio on them. So it's, I think there's a factor of that it's like, I don't need to really do this, but it was, you know, it was, there was zero like sticking your chest out and bragging. But there was a confidence amongst everybody as well that it was, you know, very humble, but also this quiet confidence, right? Yeah. It's like the guy in the back of the room, but it was a room, every guy in the room was like this, you know, you're like, okay, I don't know that I'm screwing around with that guy either.
Yeah, so it's the control of the tongue. You're okay with being quiet. You're okay with choosing your words carefully. That's what's really sticking out to me. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's an awesome experience, man. Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm super grateful.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, you just try to take away and learn. And the action that these guys take, like I've already gotten, like nobody's passing out business cards. Like nobody, I didn't see one business card the whole time, right? Where everybody's like, hey, here's my business card. Get a hold of me. Like nobody's taking selfies. Nobody's passing out business cards. Yet relationships are forming. Naturally, organically. And I've had 6 guys already reach back out and want to do different things. And like, it's like, if you talked about something, these guys are like action takers. It's like, okay, I'm not waiting for it anymore. We're running down the road. Right. And so it's really interesting because I've also been to conferences where I've spoke at or I've attended and you know, it's a pass out my business card fest. And then you don't really, nobody really follows up with anything. Everybody talks about a ton of stuff and nothing really happens. And I think about that. I think, you know, if I had to say, what's the main difference between, you know, average everyday people and these guys that are at the top of the games that they're playing. And it's that action. Like they are, hey, listen, here's the vision. We're going to take action on it. We're going to figure this out. And they just go. And I mean, to the point where during the 4 days we're there, we're setting up Zoom meetings and with different people, like, cause we talked about something at breakfast and before lunchtime, we're on Zoom meetings with somebody else that they needed to bring in. And I mean, nobody, it's not like you're just talking about it and shooting the shit and just like, oh yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah. One day I would love to try
one day. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Oh, I've really wanted to do that. Nobody says that. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, that sounds awesome.
Let's do it.
Let's set up a meeting in an hour.
Yeah.
And let's run down this road. It's like, that's sweet. So, so I look in the mirror and think, what, like, I have no excuses. Like, right. I better, you know, maybe I'll do it next week or I'll put it on the calendar when I get back. There's none of that. These guys just do it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome to be a sponge and just soak that up.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Great. Okay. Anything else? Moving on?
Nope. Moving on.
Okay. All right. So this is the deal. This guy was, so a man in Tampa near Florida or in Florida near Tampa, he was in the short-term rental. For people who are just listening, you can go and look it up. It's on the Miami Herald. He had a standoff with police. He was supposed to leave. He didn't want to leave. He answers the door. He has a knife in his hand. The cops, they're going back and forth, you know. So then the cops come in with the beanbag guns and stuff. So he stabs a cop in the shoulder. The cops, you know, shoot him. Now he's gone. He's gone. So my question is, I mean, that's crazy, right? That's this doesn't happen every day. So I'm not trying to like spark any of that. I'm just saying like, since this did happen, what we got to ask, does this fall under, you need to be doing background checks on your guests? Should you be canceling guests? How important is the checkout system? What do you even do with your short-term rental now? I feel like there's so many questions for this, but
yeah, this is,
I mean, when you hear this story, where does your head go? Do you feel like, oh, they should have done this first, or, you know?
No, I look at it as it's a one-off.
Right. Like, yes.
This is an outlier situation.
Yes.
A really unfortunate situation. Mm-hmm. This is not something you typically are going to be able to prepare for, background check for, everything else. Like all the checks that we normally do. Yeah. This probably, the guy probably passed through it. I mean, we're not doing mental health checks on people. And that's what, when this kind of stuff happens, truly, that's what it is, right? I mean, we can kind of laugh about it and think like this is a crazy situation, but this is an outlier. Yeah. This is, you know, a mentally unstable person that ended up renting a property, probably with the intention of doing some harm to himself or just getting away, and life was getting out of control. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the whole story is behind it.
Yeah.
But as an investor, it sucks because that stuff happens. But that's not like we don't change everything we do for every outlier, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's and this is definitely a far outlier situation, right? And so there are some states, I don't know what Florida is. Mm-hmm. My guess is that they probably don't have to disclose. And when you sell a property, I don't know about when you rent a property on short-term rental. I don't know if there's any rules on that. But there are some states when you sell a property, if somebody died in it, just died, period.
I didn't think of that.
You have to disclose that. Some people don't want that. Utah is a state that you don't have to disclose. At least it wasn't when we were selling. So nobody, you don't have to tell somebody if somebody died in the property. So it could affect some disclosures or something at the end of the day when they have to sell. But unfortunate situation, definitely an outlier, not something I'm going to change, you know, our policies or our background checks or anything else. Or like, I my head does not think, oh, I would have done this different or I would have done that different. No, I think that that's just an unfortunate situation that something happened, right? Yeah. That's not even, you know, the outlier of somebody getting hurt on your property where you look and say, what can I do different to prevent it from happening again? That's something like this is very difficult.
I mean, this is wild. This is like a way out there. Yeah. Would you sell the property or would you try and lean into it as this is the place where this happened?
You have a dark mind, bro.
I'm trying to make money on this, dude.
I am not leaning into that situation. Okay. I am not trying to say this is where the cops shot the guy. Well, this is where he stabbed the officer.
That could be your whole thing, you know? Unique experience.
I mean, to each their own. I'm not leaning into that one.
Okay. All right. But you wouldn't sell though. You would keep it.
Yeah. I think.
Okay.
You look at it, you're going to have some cleanup to do and stuff like that, but hopefully not a lot. Who knows?
Cleanup to do. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I have had people, I've had two people commit suicide in the properties that I've had. And they're, some of them were very, very messy. And so I have had that actually in some rental properties, not in short-term rentals back when I had long-term rentals. Uh-huh. And so I have had that happen before. It really sucks.
That's tough.
Yeah. And so I've had it happen twice in our rental property. So I've been there and done that. On the somebody taking their own life in our property, never had a cop shoot somebody in our property, but it can be, to say that it can be a little messy, it can be a little messy.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. Yeah. All right, let's move on to something else, man.
This is what we have on the,
transition, dude. Okay, here we go. How long can short-term rentals make you money? Okay. So, you know, we talked about bonus depreciation. We talked about the fun things, front end cost expense, the bonus depreciation at the end of the year, these kinds of things. So I wanted to run down the road of 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years. What does the long term look like? You know? So should we start with the short term?
So no, I mean, they're short term rentals, but they're long term investments.
Right.
So the ultimate answer is forever, right? It's an asset. Real estate lasts a long time. You're going to have some revamps, fix ups along the way, redesign, whatever. You're gonna have to refresh the property along the way, but it can make you money the whole time, you know, and it can be a long-term investment. There are legacy properties that people will have for 30, 40, 50 years, maybe in their family.
Okay.
And they can be making money the whole time if they're at, you know, income producing assets. I mean, there's not a timeline on it necessarily. Oh, wow. Now, short-term rentals, like that, when you look at like long-term rentals, we would say, well, how long can they make you money? Well, they can make you money for a long time, and then you sell them to somebody else and they make them money for a long time and they keep going, right?
Right.
Short-term rentals have just now become recently a mainstream asset class. They're not going anywhere. So their runway is very long, and it's okay. And the longer you're in it, the lower your basis is, you know, and because property prices have gone up and you bought it, you know, like any property you look at that was purchased 20 years ago, it's got a really low basis for the revenue that it's generating. So the longer term you have it, the more money it actually is going to be making you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, you know, I think about other asset class, like even for instance, stocks or crypto, you buy it at a low point, you sell it at a high point, but this is not that. You're going to buy this and you're going to hold this. This is a long-term deal. Okay. So now
you... Well, and you look at it, here's where it comes down to property goals.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. I might have my property goals might be different than yours. Mm. And where I have six properties, but I've owned a lot more than six properties over the years because I'm always looking at my return on equity. There's a point where I could keep these properties, pay them completely off, have a very low basis, and they continue to make me money. What I like to do though is I look at that return on equity, and usually for me, somewhere in that 5 to 7 year mark, I flip the property. I say, hey, listen, I've got a decent amount of equity in here. I can take that out, take that chunk of money that now is on top of what I put into that property. So I might have put $100,000, but now I have $500,000 of equity on top of that. So now I'm taking out $600,000 and being able to buy a bigger and better property, right? A $300,000 property, for example, is not likely to turn into a $3 million property in a 10-year period, right? Like it's probably not going up that high.
Right.
But it might cap out at 800, 900. And you're like, hey, miss, I feel like I've got really good equity in this property. I'm going to pull it out and then I'm going to go buy a property for $1 million. But that property does have the potential to hit the $3-4 million range. It's probably not going to make it to 15 or 20. And so I'm going to pull it out and then put it into something else. And so it continues to grow. So basically I'm parlaying my equity into bigger and better properties that have the potential to appreciate higher amounts. Because the dollar amounts are bigger. The percentage is not that much bigger. They might all be appreciating at 5 to 8%, right? But my dollar amounts are bigger. And so it continues to parlay up. So long-winded answer on that is there's multiple paths you can run down. And what your strategy ends up being is, okay, where and what path am I going to run down? There are plenty of people who say, hey, listen, I want this to be a legacy property and I'm going to own it for 30 years. I'm going to own it for, you know, I want this in the family for the long term. We love it. Here's what we want to do. It gets paid off. It continues to produce for us. We get to use it as a lifestyle asset, despite what some of the gurus, air quotes, are out there saying that lifestyle assets don't work. Those of you that are the gurus saying that, I completely disagree. And you know who you are. So shot taken.
Okay. So it depends on your property goals. Some people may, like you said, say in 30 years when or whatever the mortgage is paid off, we're going to have this thing and we're just going to use it family. We're not even going to go Airbnb anymore. This is going to be our own thing. And so it just depends. It depends
on you. And you might still continue to use it, right? But your basis is so low. I mean, any property that was purchased 30 years ago has a really low basis, right?
Okay.
And so basis meaning what you're into it versus what it's worth right now, like what you could go replace it for. And so your basis is so low versus the revenue generated and everything else because revenue has gone up over the past 30 years. And your payment, somebody else has paid off that property. At this stage, you probably own it free and clear. You probably have a zero basis. And so it's infinite return on that investment. You've probably many times over gotten a return of your capital that you put into the property. And so that can be a great plan as well. Yeah. And that goes to how long does it work? It's going to work as long as you want it to work.
Wow. Right? Interesting. Okay. You kind of touched on revamping the property. So I'm curious how, you know, I would guess, now correct me if I'm wrong, someone like Mountain Cabin would have to, or versus a beach house in Miami, Florida, they may have to revamp at different time periods. One may be 5 years, one could be seven or whatever the time period is. But what is a revamp? What does that look like?
Well, it's a couple things. So okay. One, you've got just regular maintenance that mm-hmm. properties have to have.
Right.
The harsher the elements, the more maintenance you have. You know, you might have a property in the mountains that has different seasons and mm-hmm. you have snow and you have summer and heat and everything mm-hmm. else and those big shifts in temperatures. Mm-hmm. That takes its toll on properties and systems mm-hmm. and things like that. So mm-hmm. you're saying, okay, I might have to, you know, my lifespan on my heating and cooling system might be only, you know, 6 years in this environment, where in a more stable type of environment, you might get 10 or 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. So you're looking at saying, what does that cost? If I have a property on the salt in those areas that are on the ocean, mm-hmm. salt you can see a property that has, if it has any metal, it's all rusted out mm-hmm. and it looks like it hasn't been looked at for, you know, 15 years, and that metal, those metal hinges are only a year old because of the salt, right? Yeah. It's a harsh environment mm-hmm. on certain systems and certain materials. Mm-hmm. And so you take that into consideration first. We do that in the underwriting. Mm-hmm. You're going to look and say, hey, listen, how much of a maintenance reserve do I have? When it comes to an actual overhaul, if you're doing it correctly, and I'm assuming, let's say, like in my opinion, like having that, you know, this immersive experience right out of the gate, mm-hmm. and you're mm-hmm. really dialing it in and you're not having to go in and revamp that, right? Mm-hmm. So
if you miss on that,
you're going to have to do that as soon as you recognize you missed, right?
Right.
Let's assume we did all that right. We got our okay. immersive experience. We've got all the custom artwork. We got the design the way that we want it mm-hmm. and it's working. Mm-hmm. Well, there's wear and tear on properties. Right. And there's people in and out of them. And depending on your property, if it's a very high occupancy property, you're probably like, let's say you're in a market that averages 80% occupancy. You're mm-hmm. probably doing a revamp maybe every 5 years-ish, 4 to 5 years okay. On a high occupancy type of a property. Mm-hmm. You might be in a market that a very good property is operating at less than 50% occupancy. Now you're getting, you're stretching that maybe 5 to 7 years before you have to do any sort of revamp, because you're going to have to eventually freshen these properties up, new rugs, new couches, new case goods. Right. Maybe the artwork still works. Maybe the immersive experience and design overall still works. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you have, maybe the market's changed a little bit and we're like, hey, we're going to go do something different. And so usually it's going to be somewhere in that 4 to 7 year period. And the sliding scale is a lot of times going to be determined based on your occupancy. Right. Mm. A property that's getting 80% occupancy is going to have, you know, twice the usage over a given period of time as a property at 40% occupancy. Mm. Right.
Okay.
And so people always, that's why I always tell people, I'm not always trying to chase the highest occupancy. I want the highest total dollar amount, which is a factor of occupancy and nightly rates, but I will try to push my nightly rates higher and my occupancy down so that I'm maximizing a lower occupancy and a higher nightly rate. Right. Because I know that if I can stretch getting a return on that furniture for another year or two, that's a big deal. Mm. Right. And mm-hmm. so, and people a lot of times don't take that into account when they're thinking, okay, what are some of these things that are going to get run down? That happens. Those things are going to get used and need to be replaced, and they're going to get damaged. And over a certain period of time, all your furniture is going to need to have a turnover. And a lot of times it's somewhere in that 4 to 7 year period. And it's determined based on occupancy typically.
Mm. Okay. That's really interesting about the occupancy and the nightly rate. That makes total sense to me. When it comes to, they did all the work on the front end and they did a really good job at the front end. 4 to 6 years later, they go, you know, it's time to revamp it. Is there a kind of somewhat general rule of thumb, 10,000 to 50,000 range? Or is there like any kind of, or it just goes, no, it just kind of depends on where you're at.
Yeah. It's so the general rule of thumb for us is based on price per square foot.
Okay.
And so we're looking at it, mm-hmm. not assuming we have a lot of capital expenses on the property, meaning we don't need to do any construction remodel stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That can be different area by area. You know, to remodel a kitchen, it might be, $80 a foot in some areas, and it might be, you know, $120 a foot in another area.
Right.
That right. And so there's price per square foot for remodels, and there's price per square foot that we look at for furnishings, fixtures, artwork, that kind of stuff. Right. And so those things we have a pretty dialed in price per square foot that we look at. And if we're starting from scratch, we're usually going to budget around $40 a foot. If I have to go put all new furniture in, all new artwork, all that, all the accessories that go along with that, I'm going to budget around $40 a foot.
$40.
And, and then if I'm going to do any sort of capital expenses, remodel expenses, any systems that need to be replaced, all that's going to be on top of that. But if I'm looking at just a, I'm going to start over from scratch or I'm going to go into a brand new property, that's where it's going to be.
Okay. All right. That was all my questions for how long can short-term rentals make you money? Now we're going into my next topic here.
Okay.
How fast do you pay off your mortgage? This was kind of tying back into, you know, we talked about the person's property goals. Say they want to have it further for a longer period of time. And I'm thinking to myself, if someone's locked into, I guess 30-year mortgage, how long does it normally take to be able to pay off that property? Is that kind of like a, I mean, I guess it's another random general question I'm asking here of, have you seen that people are able to pay it off in 15 years, 20 years, because they take a lot more of the revenue and pay it towards a mortgage? Or do people, they go, no, I'd rather have, you know, I'd rather be paying for it for longer. Does this even kind of make sense what I'm trying to
100%.
Ask?
100%. It is, it's very much, again, what are your goals?
Right.
I know some investors that never want to pay it off. They're like, somebody else is paying for it. Who cares? Right.
Right.
Let me just pay the payment.
Yeah.
Somebody else is paying that payment. It's an expense toward my property.
Yes.
That somebody else is taking care of. And then I have revenue on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Other investors are saying, hey, listen, I'm going to take all the revenue and I'm going to pour it into this property and get this thing paid off faster because I don't want to pay all that interest.
Okay.
They're, you know, in the past, when rates were at 3-4%, 2.5% on some properties, I mean, we got really low for a period of time.
Yeah.
No, why would you ever want to pay that off? It's like, man, that's like almost free money. Just pay the minimum payment and let somebody else pay it and use that money for something else. Now, there's doesn't mean you don't want to have that you want to always have debt service on your properties. There's a lot of peace of mind when properties are owned free and clear.
Right.
And so there's a lot of reasons that maybe on paper, it seems better just to leave it on there and pay the minimum payment and keep the money.
Right.
There are a lot of other reasons that don't show up on paper, which is that like that peace of mind and that I mean, it's really nice to have 3 or 4 properties that are owned free and clear. The other nice thing about owned free and clear properties is you can borrow against them and use money without selling them tax-free. And so you can say, hey, listen, I got 3 properties worth $1 million here. So I got $3 million of equity. I can tap into that, not pay capital gains taxes, not over leverage them, pull money out, use it for whatever the heck I want is income that's tax-free, usable money, whether it's building your portfolio, whether it's just enjoying the equity that you've already built up, let somebody else pay that down for you.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a lot of benefits of having properties free and clear as well for the flexibility of pulling money out of them if you need to, tax-free. Also the ability of just looking in the mirror and going to bed at night, knowing that you own properties free and clear and no debt service, right?
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's a peace of mind that is very, very like, I mean, it's awesome, right?
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to have that feeling.
Yeah. Well, we know people that are other investors that love like debt and they love certain kinds of styles of things. Do you prefer to pay it all off or do you just do the minimum payment?
I usually keep the debt on it.
You keep the debt on it.
I'll usually keep it on it. I don't usually pay extra to get them paid down.
Okay.
We'll usually typically pay them off over time and let them build up equity.
Okay.
And then ultimately let that debt service sit on the property. I don't usually leverage properties a lot of times to buy other properties.
Okay.
Because I usually like whatever debt service is on that property that it is for that property. Does that make sense?
That
like
does
I
make
want
sense.
That property's that property's liabilities to be directly related to that property.
Right.
And so because of that, I typically will just leave that debt service on there and then use the income for other stuff.
Interesting. Okay. I love it. Moving on to our next point here. We got 2 terms to figure out what they mean and then some details about them. So first and foremost, let's talk about cash on cash return because we're talking about income potential right now, people. Yeah. Cash on cash return. I've heard that. I mean, dude. So many times I've heard that someone hasn't, and they're curious.
Do you know what it is?
Cash on cash, bro. It's how much you put down and how much you get back. I give you cash. How much am I getting back, baby? Cash on cash.
What's your return on that?
What's
money
my return? Right. All right. So let's define it. Importance, misconceptions. This seems to always to be like the big one, huh?
Yeah.
We the go cash on cash return.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because it's what a lot of investors just, they hear about it a lot. Yeah. It's easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, it's like, yeah, I got this much money in. How much am I getting out?
Yeah.
Where a lot of new investors lose out is they forget about all four levers of real estate, mm-hmm. right? They look at cash on cash, and that's how they judge the deal, mm-hmm. is strictly cash on cash. Well, real estate is multifaceted, and it has returns in multiple different areas. Mm-hmm. So we were just talking about debt pay down, mm-hmm. right? You're having somebody else pay down a loan for you, mm-hmm. and you're gaining value by them paying down that loan. You're gaining equity. Your equity is growing in your property because your debt service is going down, mm-hmm. right? It's decreasing. And every year, every month, somebody pays your payment, that's going down a little bit. So mm-hmm. when you start to compound that year, 5 years, 10 years, that's a extra, like it's a big extra return mm-hmm. that's not counted on your cash on cash.
Right.
Cash on
right.
cash is how much I gave $100,000. How much cash flow do I bring back every single year? Mm-hmm. Your cash flow is a fraction of what your gross revenue is. Now, okay. it's your net income, right? It's how much income you're putting in your pocket at the end of the day, mm-hmm. but it's not the entire return you're getting from real estate. And mm-hmm. and it gets hard for, I don't know why, but okay. new investors will judge mm-hmm. real estate based on the money they get back in their pocket on net income. Mm-hmm. They judge crypto and stocks and everything else very different. Like they'll look at their computer screen and they'll say, yeah, I bought crypto for $100,000 for a Bitcoin and now it's at 120 and I just got a 20% return in 3 days, right? Mm-hmm. That's just on paper. They didn't cash that out. There's no cash flow. They're not putting any money in their pocket. Their portfolio is growing. Their worth of that Bitcoin is growing. Mm-hmm. And they look at that. Same with stocks, same with mutual funds, same with everything else. A lot of them aren't paying off dividends and you're not getting any cash flow. So it's funny mm-hmm. to me that people judge real estate based on just the cash flow when in reality, it's the smallest return you're typically going to have in any given deal. Mm-hmm. The next one, and it's usually that you got that debt service and that mm-hmm. note pay down by mm-hmm. somebody else. Mm-hmm. On a 7% mortgage over the very first year, which is mostly interest and mm-hmm. zero principal pay down, mm-hmm. you're still going to pick up on if I have $100,000 down on a $500,000 property, that $400,000 note's usually going to get paid down. I'm gaining another $5,000 in equity, mm-hmm. right? So I've got a nice little extra 5% return there. Mm-hmm. That is true, right? That's my, I'm growing that, I've got equity in that property mm-hmm. somebody else is giving me. Mm-hmm. And that comes out of that gross revenue. That's part right. of that is debt service, right? The next piece is appreciation. Real estate goes up in value mm-hmm. over time, especially over long periods of time. It goes mm-hmm. up and down in short periods of time, but over a long mm-hmm. period of time, it's going up. And, mm-hmm. and you're going to bank on, just like that Bitcoin went from $100,000 to 120, real estate's going to do something similar. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be as volatile. It doesn't get traded as fast as like stocks and crypto and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it doesn't go up and down as fast. But it's going to be very, over time, you're going to look back and say, oh man, that was a pretty nice return on my investment as well. Mm-hmm. And then, so you've got, so far we're at cash on cash, mm-hmm. we're at our note pay down,
right.
we're at appreciation, mm-hmm. and then we talk about depreciation, which right. is how much can we save on taxes, right? Mm-hmm. How much are we, because those materials in that property that we talked about that mm-hmm. need to be replaced
right.
over certain periods of time, we can depreciate that. That's actually a paper loss to us. Mm-hmm. If I spend $40 a foot on a whole bunch of furniture that has a useful life of 5 or 7 years and I cost seg that out, it's like, yeah, I just dropped I dropped $100,000 and they gave me a five-year depreciation schedule on this $100,000 wow. every wow. single year. I get a $20,000 like reduction or a write-off, basically the depreciation that I really didn't have a $20,000 loss, but I can use that against taxes. If I'm in a 30% tax bracket, I just saved another $6,000 on taxes. I didn't have to pay the IRS just by owning that real estate and depreciating it. Mm. And that's not even bonus depreciation that we talk about. Wow. That's just regular type of depreciation. It's one little example of it and uh-huh. a quick, like that I could do the math in my head.
Right.
All those different things though, are a big deal on the overall return. And mm. so the misconception when it comes to real estate is don't just judge it based on your cash on cash return. And then also what you ask is the return of capital. Mm-hmm. Return of capital mm-hmm. is a huge thing that a lot of investors don't pay close attention to. It's like, how fast can I get my money back and put it into something else? Mm-hmm. If I have $100,000 in this deal, when can I get my $100,000 out of this deal to go put it into another deal? Because mm-hmm. as soon as I get my return of capital, mm-hmm. all of a sudden I'm getting infinite returns on this property, essentially. Let's say
that again. Hold on one more time. If I put $100,000 down and I want my $100,000 back, mm-hmm. then it's what an infinite what?
It's also all of a sudden it becomes an infinite return on that deal because now I've got my return of capital. I've got my $100,000 out of that deal.
Right.
I still own the deal.
Right.
It's still spitting off some money for me. I'm still getting tax advantage, all that stuff. And so, it starts to basically, I've got my $100,000 that I can parlay into another property, go do it again, duplicate what I just did. This property is already producing, gave me my $100,000 right. back, and I keep parlaying it. What if you can parlay your $100,000 every 3 years, every 4 years, every 5 years, every 2 years, every 1 year, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that's a big deal. And that's what a lot of investors do when they think about scaling mm-hmm. and they think about saying, hey, listen, I'm going to take this $100,000. Mm-hmm. And when you hear people say, well, I'm not going to be able to save up $100,000, you know, every year to go buy another property. It's like, no, take your first $100,000, put it into a property, focus on returning the return of that capital. What if it's 2 years? What if it's 3 years? Mm-hmm. You likely can get it back in a certain period of time. There's going to be a certain period you're getting it back anyways.
Right.
But let's focus on it and try to get it back 2 years from now. And you don't have to save up one more dollar. You're going to get your return of your $100,000 to go do that again. Mm. And so what if you're buying a property every 3 years in a 10, 15 year time horizon? That adds up pretty fast. And you didn't have to save up a down payment for every single property. That's the other thing that a lot of investors don't understand is how are you getting your return of capital? What are you doing to get that? Sometimes that's tapping into equity with refinances. Sometimes that is cash flow. You got high cash flowing type properties. Sometimes that is reducing your taxes a certain amount. So instead of paying X amount to the IRS, you don't pay them because you bought this property and you take that money you were going to pay them and put it in your investment account. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to get a return of money by owning this piece of property. It comes in multiple places.
Yeah.
And so then you just parlay it into the next one. Wow. Right? Does that make sense?
That does make sense. That's really interesting. How much would you say, you know, you did the $100,000 example. Could somebody do that with $50,000? Or should you actually be going more? No, you should probably start with like the 250.
No.
Was the 100
you can do it with? No, I use 100,000 as an example all the time. Right. Some math's easy in my head.
Right. But is that like an actual figure that people should kind of go for, or they should go for 30,000?
30 is low on our side. So that, like we've talked about before, the draw. So yes, theoretically, you could do it with any amount. Okay. You could do it 10,000, 20,000, 30,000. Doesn't really matter theoretically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Reality wise, real estate and short-term rentals specifically are very capital intensive. Even if you got somebody to do a zero down loan and you listen to all the guys on you know, YouTube and Instagram and did a subject to deal or you did a creative financing or you did a wrap mortgage, you did zero down. Mm-hmm. Short-term rentals, on the back end, we still have to create these immersive experiences.
Right.
And so we are still going to have that $40 a foot bill to be able to get these properties ready to go for us to maximize them as short-term rental assets. They're going to be furnished properties, artwork, accessories, all those things. So they are a little more capital intensive.
Okay.
So theoretically, yes, you can buy properties with zero money down, right? Happens all the time. We do it. We've done it many, many, many times over the years. And I love the skill set of being able to do it. You should, every real estate investor should know that. You still have to get these properties set up. So you're still going to have some capital.
Right.
I would say on the low side, you're probably setting up. I mean, if you've got a 1,000 square foot property, you're still dumping 40 grand into it, right? So,
okay.
You know,
so that was a good example then, the $100,000. That's like a normal goal.
Yeah, it's a pretty good starting point to do that. But it's not, a lot of people, they overthink that I'm never going to get this. I'm never going to be able to do my next property.
Right.
Yes, you will.
Right.
Why don't you look at where you're gaining a return on that $100,000? Mm-hmm. I mean, we did an example of this in a couple of podcasts back where I broke down a $500,000 acquisition and showed that you know, realistically, in a very conservative way, we're targeting about a 78% return on our investment. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I should be able to roll that $100,000 in that example from cash flow and from my tax savings in about a year and a half, 2 year period.
That was 261, get rich on break-even properties. Yeah. I believe that was the one where we had on the side-by-side. Yep. episode 261, Get Rich on Break-Even Properties. We break it down. Okay, that was really interesting. Return of capital, 100,000. That's like a normal, that seems awesome.
Yeah, a lot of people can do that.
Yeah, so why aren't people so focused on just that cash on cash return then? Why,
I don't know.
Why don't people understand the other three, you know, you name one, why don't they understand the other three levers? Because are they thinking of it as a stock? Like, you know, you buy here, you sell there. Are they thinking about, they're just trying to use the same formula for that as real estate? Or why
is there? I just think it's because we talk about and focus on what we understand. That's a pretty tangible thing to understand. If I'm making $5,000 a year, positive cash flow, what is my positive cash flow? Let's say I'm making $500 a month on a property. I'm looking at it and a lot of people will think that that's, I don't know. I think when they think about it, those things I just talked about, pretty simple. Most people understand all four of those things are in almost every real estate deal you'll ever look at, has all four of those components of the return that creates your internal rate of return. But I think it's just focused on so much on the cash on cash because it's a tangible return that we put in our pocket. But the gains on stocks, the gains on crypto, they're not tangible returns until you sell them. And the other tangible return is a tangible return is the tax savings on depreciation. Now with short-term rentals and the short-term rental loophole bonus depreciation, that's a tangible return, right? You literally will pay X amount less in taxes by being able to implement that strategy. And that's tangible in your pocket from buying that property.
That's really interesting to think about, like why someone would choose to invest in like a real estate short-term rental than a stock. I mean, if I want, I can download Robinhood on my iPhone and just start investing today. But then you go into the vitality or whatever it was of it, like how it goes up and down. You're not sure that aspect of it. Whereas this is going to take like more work, but then you have all these other levers to pull and all these other aspects of it to it. So I guess I'm curious on people's mentality of why they would choose one over the other.
Well, there's a place for all of it.
Yeah.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Right. One. Okay. Investing in stocks or crypto. I mean, we could both say, hey, we're going to go buy Bitcoin today and feel really comfortable. We don't do anything to affect Bitcoin's prices. We're just investing in Bitcoin.
Right.
We can do it. We can set up an account. We can set up a wallet. We could buy it by the end of the day. And we could say, we're going to buy a short-term rental. You're not buying a short-term rental by the end of the day. There's a lot more moving parts. Right. There's a lot more things going on. So, so there's that aspect. This is a tangible asset. It's going to take a lot more time. I'm going to have to do a lot more to affect its performance. Yeah. I like that. I like being able to affect the performance. I personally don't like the fact that somebody can come out on Twitter and tweet something.
Right.
And my crypto drops,
right?
And, you know, or skyrockets. Yes. I mean, it's like whoever decides to say what, they're just. It feels like it's bought and sold on emotion, because you can do it so fast, right? And so, real estate's really not. It's not as liquid of an asset, which I think is why it feels more stable. I'm old school. I like I like tangible assets. I like something. I like to walk here and say, you know, I own this land. I own this property. I own this, But that doesn't mean that it's the end all be all for everybody. There's just pros and cons to all of them, right?
Oh, that was really interesting. It made me think about those the people you're with this weekend. How you were saying they're thinking long term, and they have they want control over the things that, like their destiny. They're not going to just let somebody tweet something and it's going to. So that was really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, it was interesting. When we talk about the ownership model all the time. That was 100% an underlying theme of a lot of these, the people in the room. It's ownership.
Yeah.
It's ownership of the companies. It's ownership of the assets. It's ownership of the IP. It's ownership of all of it. And it's like, hey, listen, we're very much, you know, like want the ownership aspect, the arbitrage side of it is not a lot of people are interested in.
Yeah, man. That's interesting. That's what the top dogs are doing, you know?
Hey, let's follow them.
Let's follow them a little bit.
That's the wheel, right?
Let's learn. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I had for today.
Okay. That's it.
That's it.
Okay. Awesome, guys. Well, listen, we appreciate you sticking it out with us. Got a lot of good topics, a lot of had a lot of fun. Felt like I learned a lot, rejuvenated over last week. And good job on the topics, Jake.
Thank you, sir. So appreciate
you. We'll wrap up today, you guys. We always appreciate your time. We love that you spend it with us. It means a lot to us. If you know somebody that would like to be part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us. There's a lot of new investors that are introduced to this game and this show through our podcast. And a lot of that has to do with you guys that are sharing it. And so kind of paying it forward a little bit for some of those people that are maybe a little confused. And our goal is to help people walk into this game with their eyes wide open, at least share our view of this world and right or wrong. At least it gives them a place and a platform to go watch and listen on. So if you have more than 30 seconds and you do share this show, that's appreciated. More than 30 seconds, go like it or review it on whatever platform you are on. So when somebody sees those reviews, they're not the first person at the party and they can say, hey, listen, Jake thought Sean was a good guy. So maybe I'll go listen to him.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So those things help us. We appreciate it as always. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, babe.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.